tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. This is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, yes, exactly. That's how it works. Listen, I'm not dismissing. I will never dismiss Drake's influence on the Raptors. But I do know that when Beverly Hills Cop 2 came out, it was very important for Mark Aguirre to get a phone call from Bob Seger in 1988. Very, very important. Before the trade for Adrian Dantley happened. You know that that happened. Bob Seger called Mark Aguirre and said, I'm Bob Seger. I'm 47 years old. I'll be 68. And I'm calling on a rotary phone, and I want you to come to Detroit. More on Drake, more on the Raptors a little later on. Andrew Walker will join us at halftime from Ford Field. I've been to Thanksgiving games in Detroit. It could be a big mistake putting Andrew on the air. You could use that sentence in a lot of different contexts. It would be a big mistake to put Andrew Walker on the air. But we won't use it in this particular context. So Matt Stafford, just honest to God, it's Joe Montana it's Joe Montana during the 84 playoffs. It's Eli Manning during both his playoff runs. 24 for the Lions, 7 for the Philadelphia Eagles. And our producer, J.D. Bunkus, he's so reactionary. Young people, they're really reactionary. Like about 5 weeks, it was probably 3 weeks ago. And we did a little thing that I think we fleshed it out on the air. And we said, give us the 10 NFL organizations that don't like their quarterback the most. Hate's a really strong word, right? They don't like their quarterback the most. And he like locked in the Lions. I said, Matt Stafford's pretty good. He's surrounded by a ton of dysfunction right now. Not a good offensive coordinator. Outside of Calvin Johnson, there hasn't been a running game to be seen or heard from in 4 years. Matt Stafford's just fine. Just fine. Lions are about to win their third straight, and this one's a laugher. But this is special. We've got Carolina Dallas a little later on today, and the third game, again, hard to believe it's only been around for 10 years, the Thanksgiving triple header, Bears-Packers at Lambeau. I used to race home. I don't think I ever pulled a Ferris Bueller and faked an illness in elementary school or high school, but you'd race home, just try and see the end of the Lions game, see all the Cowboys game. I remember registering for courses at Western, and you used to have to do it on the telephone. You'd pick a course, and you thought about the Thursday for two reasons. One, it's the first day of the NCAA, and you'd have a pool and with your roommates, and you'd want to watch those games. You didn't want a heavy course load on Thursday. Like, my kids asked me, they're 9 and 7. They think school is like Shawshank Redemption right now. They're there all day, 5 days a week. And I said, when you get to university, I was a political science student. I think I had a 12-hour course load a week. You space that thing out so much. Elliot Freeman joins us now, NHL insider, Hockey Night in Canada, NHL on Sportsnet. You are a fellow Western grad. I think you graduated from there.
No,
there's no proof.
I never graduated. I'm like, I know so many people who've been nailed in resume scandals. I take real pains to say I'm not a Western
but
grad.
But do you remember there was like a phone system? You'd pick your courses but you'd have a great, it was sort of like, it was as close as any of us could get to like draft day. And sort of like scheming it out, hoping a course wasn't full. You might need to know a professor to pull some strings. But Thursdays, Thanksgiving, and the NCAA tournament, those are really important days for college students. They still are.
Well, I never mind college. In high school, I'd be sick on that day. Now, my dad was wise to it, but he tried. You always tried to get out of it in high school, too. No question about it. But the great thing about being away at university is that it took discipline of your own to actually go to class, and neither of us had any.
I went to the 91 year for the Lions, and that's the year they actually went and won a playoff game. So I'm maybe second year, can't remember. And I had a 7 to 10 Middle East politics class on Thursday night. But we go to the 12:30 game, and I'm like, we'll be back by 6:15, and I'll just, like, we didn't get back to a snowstorm. We didn't get back till 8:45. I had the temerity to walk into the class with about 45 minutes left in the lecture. And it's only like 18 people. So it's not like one of those huge rooms where you can, at University College, where you can just come in the back door, as it were. It was a bad look, but I was not a good student in second year. It was a long, 91-92 was not my best academic.
You learn a lot more outside of a classroom than you learn in it.
Loads. That. Yeah. So take your kids out. The second my kid can name all six teams playing on Thanksgiving, he gets the day off. That happens. I preach that to people. So last night, we start with Lundqvist Price, and we don't finish with either Lundqvist or Price. Should Canadiens fans look at this and go, we're rolling. It's goaltending right now. But it's something nagging Carey Price, and nagging's often worse than something where it's like, boom, this is it. We take care of it. You're gone a month. You come back. It never happened. Nagging's concerning when it comes to a goalie, isn't it?
It sure is. And you know what? You should relax and say they'll get this sorted out. But we know the red panic button is getting jumped on right now. Like, how bad is this? How serious is this? They're worried. And, I think it could be a while before we see Price again, and it probably should be a while before we see Price again, because this is something you've got to make sure about. That's number one. And number two, they've already shown that if Mike Condon has to be the guy for a couple of weeks, you can handle it. So if I'm the Montreal Canadiens, I'm going with extra caution. If they say, okay, he's ready to play, then I say, you know what, we're going to wait a little bit longer, because if you know Price, remember in Sochi, he played through an injury. He's a guy who, if you would say to him, if he can say, look, I'm all right, I'll play through it, he will. And sometimes the team has to save that kind of player from himself. I think the other thing to me, Greg, that kind of stands out a bit here is that here's a guy who in the middle of his last break went for a second opinion. And every player under the CBA has the right to do that. But I always wonder, like, exactly what does that mean? Does he think that, he's not sure about what's going on here. He's not 100% convinced in the diagnosis or how it's getting treated. We don't really know the answer to that question, but that said to me that, he was a little bit concerned with what potentially was going on inside his body.
Elliot Friedman, our guest, Brady and Walker. The Canadiens and their potential trade targets were your fourth and fifth notes in your 30 thoughts. I've been saying this to Andrew for a while. They kind of know what they are, but they also know what they aren't when it comes to April and May. And if they want that push, I do think that's a team, and I thought that from game one, Elliot, that is so good, very great nucleus, but they got to be big spenders. If they want to go for it in sort of how the old Avalanche and Red Wings and Stars used to go for it, this might be the year to do it for them.
I agree, and I think they know it too. Like, they know that their window right now is 3 years, because that's when you've got to sign Carey Price. And in 4 years, you've got to sign, Max Pacioretty. And you're going to have a defenseman already who's got a $9 million AAV. So you know that you're going to have some big decisions to make. So I think they're well aware of what their window is. And when you have Carey Price behind you, you've always got a chance to win. I think he's looking at both defense and offense, defense and forwards. I think he'd like to add one of each if he could. And, I do know this, that his peers will tell you he's one of the most active callers out there. What's available? What are you thinking? Like, if you decide to do this, I'm going to be on top of this. It's funny, like, Anthopoulos, the way he pursued Donaldson, he was told the guy's not available, but, he kept on it and kept on it. And I thought it was interesting how when Ben Sherrington was fired in Boston, he told students that, he looked at Donaldson too, but he wasn't as persistent as Anthopoulos was, and maybe that was his mistake. And I think there's a skill to guys like Bergevin who do that kind of stuff, who are, okay, he's not available now, I'll call back in 3 weeks and check and see if that's changed. And I think Bergevin is very much one of those guys.
Elliot Friedman joining us, Brady and Walker. By the way, a ton of hockey on Sportsnet tomorrow with the U.S. holiday. Starts with Rangers-Boston on Sportsnet at 1, followed by the Preds and Flyers at 3:30. This is another great tradition. There were never this many afternoon games on the Thanksgiving Friday when we were kids, was there?
No, and it was Boston. I think Philly used to do one.
Yeah.
But now it's all over the place. We go from the orgy of football to the orgy of puck.
The funny thing, St. Louis played the Leafs in a Canadian Thanksgiving Day game, and it felt like people hated it because it was like, oh, I want to go to the cottage. It's a long weekend. That was universally derided, and they never tried it again for Canadian Thanksgiving matinee games. But I remember that one.
We like to complain in this country.
That's right. That's right. Very sometimes some insecurity. So I thought the Sharks had one of those patented go on the road, come back, get reassociated into your life in the Bay Area for a couple days. and look like crap. Chicago beat them 5-2 last night. It's a good team. Kane's rolling right now, 17 straight games with a point, but it was that typical game, and players talk about it, and until you're around players and coaches, they all worry about that game after a great road trip, don't they?
You know, it's the great line that a player once told me, a player with a really good sense of humor. And I once asked him about games like that. He goes, yeah, the first one's back is always tough because you've got to pretend to be happy to see your family. and then we laughed about it. And, you know, this is a guy who had a great sense of humor. And and he would joke about stuff like that. And I think there is some truth to it. I mean, if you're gone on a six-game road trip from California, you get home, there's a lot of stuff to do. And I do think it does, you know, throw you off a little bit. Also, the whole time zone thing. But, yeah, and you know what? Chicago's been sitting there. I mean, they had their Vegas trip, and they lost their last game before Vegas in Vancouver. So you know that once they get back to practice, Joel Quenneville's saying, all right, guys, you lost. We didn't cancel the trip. We never would, but now you owe us one. Mm-hmm. So you knew the Blackhawks were going to come out and be ready for that one. And, you know, San Jose is a funny team. That's a really funny division. Like, some of those teams are really streaky. You can't figure any of them out. Nobody in that division right now scares you, and you figure L.A. or Anaheim would. There's some teams out there playing really streaky, weird hockey. Like, how about Getzlaff last night blaming the building for the bad atmosphere? I mean, geez, like, it's not the building's fault you threw that puck in front of your own net in the third period.
Yeah, and boy, I watched, actually, Walk and I were both simultaneously watching, and Calgary gets up 2-0 on four shots. They chase Khudobin out, and I'm going, this could be a bad loss for Bruce Boudreau. Like, people hate being on the Boudreau watch, but
because we all love him.
Yeah, but they've lost now three against Arizona. There hasn't been a stretch where because people just keep thinking the worst is over for them. But we thought that with the Sharks last year, and we thought that with the Kings. And 45 games in, those teams were in deep holes, and Anaheim might be the same this year.
Yeah, you know, the one thing, though, and normally, like, you know, I keep that November 1st stat, and U.S. Thanksgiving's another really good one, too. Like, very rarely do you see changes to playoff standings after Thanksgiving, but I think the Pacific Division has the chance to be, you know, the real strange one this year, the one that doesn't follow all the rules. Like, I don't think anybody scares you. I think Anaheim is too good to be this bad, and Arizona, like, they're right there. Mm-hmm. They, you know, you look at them at the beginning of the year, nobody even thought those guys had a chance. And they're right there. And I'm curious to see how much staying power these guys have.
Do you look and say, because I think we're 24, 25 games in for some teams, and are we all universally thinking there are five teams coming from the Central? Like, when the Canucks were in town, I talked to one of their coaches after the game, and they're stressed about that. They know it's not an urgent time to make the playoffs because they're playing so many kids, but they look in the Central and go, fourth place ain't going to cut it in the Pacific.
Yeah, it's not. I think we're looking at five from the Central. Although Winnipeg is doing is really doing some damage to their season right now. They came through Toronto and they looked so good, and ever since then they've been generally awful. I thought we'd be looking at the team that missed the playoffs in the Central and saying, boy, that sixth team is really going to have a case to hate this realignment, but Winnipeg's really sending themselves into the iceberg here. I do agree with you. I think this is a five-team Central year because I just don't think the Pacific teams have it to keep up with them.
A couple columnists, this is a bigger picture demographic question, but I know you'll have a great answer. The World Cup, you will. The other guy's not here today to bog us down with Like, you look at Walker's on the line. That's exactly why I said that. We're all like,
did I ever tell you how much better you are as a single host?
The
show is so much better.
We're all like, what does Andrew Walker do all day? Where none of us can figure this out. Think about the free time you have, the free time I have, commuting in from Ajax, and we're like, Andrew's just living the dream. But he's also watching a hip-hop performance at halftime of Lions-Eagles, so I know he's excited about that.
Yeah,
he's right down with that.
He's one of those kids on the field in the Lions jersey.
I'm glad you're seeing that. So paying full attention to my great questions. So World Cup tickets. Because you covered that tournament in 04, and they're slower out of the gate. They're expensive tickets, but my recollection is they were in 04 when it was spread out in Toronto, and they played games in St. Paul as well. Is there, do you look at a reason for that? Do people, skeptical of the format? Is there just too much happening? The demographic of Toronto's changed a lot in 12 years, and we just had the World Junior here, and some of those games were tough to move, except for the Canada games that were here.
You know, I have to tell you that I just think that sometimes we move slowly, to be perfectly honest. Like, I don't think, like, I'm looking forward to this tournament. I'm looking forward to seeing the under 23 team. Like, at the beginning, I thought that team was a really dumb idea, but now I'm sold on it. And I'm gonna look forward to watching them play. But I think the issue right now, Greg, is that I just don't think it's in people's minds. And one of the things that was interesting was I got in on the second wave of Blue Jays tickets for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I don't have seasons, but I have like one of those flex packs. And so I didn't get in on the first wave. I got in on the second wave. So the moment it opened up, I went in and I bought my tickets, and I got really good seats. Like, I was about 17 rows behind the first base dugout. And I think they were season's ticket seats. And I was like, how did I get these?
Yeah.
And basically, I found out later that there were a number of season's tickets people that didn't take them. And I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's because they're too expensive. Like, I know Jim Houston bought tickets. I don't know if it's because they're too expensive. But I think sometimes in Toronto, we wait a little bit. We see, you know what, this isn't foremost in our minds right now. And then all of a sudden it becomes a big event like the Jays playoffs did, and everybody's like, I want to go. How do I get tickets? So I just think it's right now, it's more like a this isn't in our mindset kind of equation.
Yeah, it's got to be some of that. One more quickie on Edmonton, and I want to ask about the Yakupov absence for the next 2 to 4 weeks. I was really disappointed Edmonton last night. Like, and maybe I'm thinking it from a consumer's perspective. It's still a fun team. A lot of people maybe cocky. Like, we don't give people in Raleigh or Sunrise, Florida enough credit to go, McDavid's coming. This is when he's coming. I want to go see him like we used to with Crosby. But a lot of people probably bought tickets in Raleigh hoping that he'd play. He doesn't. And I thought they played like it's one of the worst Edmonton performances I've seen last night. And they lose Yakupov.
That was a terrible game.
Yeah.
You know, you have every right to feel that way. You know, Todd McClellan didn't sugarcoat it. You can't, when you're struggling to get wins, you cannot have an effort like that against a team that you can beat. It's not acceptable. And, you know, Yakupov has really struggled without McDavid there. So, like, you know, I mean, and that was the weirdest injury I've ever seen last year.
Involving the linesman.
Yeah, the linesman trying to grab for balance and he pulls him down. I mean, they're actually lucky that injury isn't a lot worse.
Yeah, our producer kind of said, our JD kind of said, should the linesman just has to go down and not rely? Like, if your plane was crashing, you wouldn't want a flight attendant using you as a human shield. You'd be like, you're an employee. Come on, I'm supposed to do that with you. Like, where's the customer? Where's the customer service?
I think it's a common human reaction. Like, can I balance myself somehow? I'm sure he feels terrible. Like, you know, that's just bad luck as much as anything else. But I thought that effort was embarrassing for Edmonton last night. And if they're like that in Detroit and Pittsburgh, they're going to get destroyed this weekend.
Listeners in our demo will know that's revenge for Tom Lysiak way back when.
That's right.
And Walker's on the line going, Brady, stop it with the 80s references.
35 years later.
35 years, yeah.
Was it
like a 25-game suspension for tripping the linesman.
That's then, remember what happened? They had to decrease it.
Yes. Don Murdoch's getting 40 games for snorting cocaine, and Tom Lysiak's getting 25 for tripping a linesman because he's mad at him for getting thrown out of the faceoff dot. It's great. Thanks for doing this, Elliot. We'll be watching Saturday night.
All right.
Enjoy the rest of that football.
Just keep up the great single work. you know what? It's like Sean McKenzie is Wally Pipp, Scott Oak.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody is Wally Pipping Andrew Walker because you don't need anybody.
No, and you use the word Pip without using the word squeak unintentionally, I think, as a pun. Thanks, Elliot.
All right, take care, guys.
There's the excellent Elliot Friedman. It's just one guy here. I'm right here. Elliot Friedman joining us on Brady and Walker. So it's 24-7 Lions against the Philadelphia Eagles. Nothing better than going, you know, we could get Joe Buck or Troy Aikman or Aaron Andrews, I'm sure, to call in. But probably, they're not going to bring as much insight at this point, especially into their FanDuel team, as Andrew Walker is. Here is half of Brady and Walker, live and local, and in one of his favorite of 50 states. I think he has it ranked about 26th. Andrew Walker joining us from Ford Field. How's it going there? We don't have a good line for him. He's sounding like he's underwater, which could be a There's going to be a very good reason for that. Let's get him away. Let's get him off the field with the rest of those children. He might have gotten on there. Anything's possible. So Matt Stafford, by the way, has been amazing so far in the first half. I thought on Chip Kelly. Let me give a minute on Chip Kelly. We'll get Andrew reestablished. Adam Schefter, great reporter for ESPN, kind of reports it's over. He described it as Chip Kelly's sick. I think both sides are sick of each other, meaning Chip Kelly of the Philadelphia Eagles and Philadelphia Eagles, maybe, and the fans of Chip Kelly. Philly's a hard market. Like, I don't know if you've been to Philadelphia. Everyone remembers the story of booing Santa Claus and getting upset and cheering Michael Irvin almost being paralyzed. But they did do that. Those are things. And it's not going very well in Philly for any of the teams right now. Flyers, mess. Phillies, mess. Sixers, oh, God, they almost won one game last night. They could start 0-20, 0-25, and it would shock no one. So the Eagles with Chip Kelly have been the one team in the last 3 years that have given that market a little bit of hope. Couple 11-5 seasons, okay? Playoff performances with Nick Foles. He's definitely got a blind spot for quarterbacks. Brian Burke always kind of confessed blind spot for goalies. You know, ride it out with Dan Kluche. You know, Vesa Toskala. No, neither of those things are good ideas. But Chip Kelly has gone from Nick Foles to Sam Bradford, and Mark Sanchez is his backup. He won a bunch of games with Sanchez last year and finished 10-6. So you got 31 wins out of 48 games. It's not going as well this year, but the guy knows offense. He knows how to coach offensively. They're eighth in total yards this year, even still. They can't put things in the end zone, and they can't get in field goal range enough times. They're getting blown out today. But I think he's staying in the NFL, and I think there's a job for Chip Kelly in the NFL if he wants it. Everyone thinks this about college basketball, too. Try it in the pros. Doesn't work. You got to go back to college. Chip Kelly's getting another chance in the NFL, and I think he may see a better situation than what he's got with Bradford and Foles. Because Foles can't play, and yet with Chip Kelly, he looked like an MVP candidate for about 9 weeks 2 years ago when he took the job off of Michael Vick. All right, we've got a better line. Walker's in Detroit right now, 24-7 lead for the Lions. How's it going there? No. Okay. We'll give another try a little later on, after the half potentially. It's not going well. 24-7 Lions lead right now. So I wanted to bring this up. Saw this story, and it got competitive juices going. Do you play chess? There's a 10-year-old chess master, okay? Story in the New York Post today. And his name is Maximilian Liu, and he's the youngest ever chess master in North America. I'm kind of lumping Canada in there. You see a picture of him on the TV screen. Looks like a wise-ass kid, doesn't he? Wearing a tracksuit. But he's 10, and he's a national master. 2% of U.S. Chess Federation members are chess masters, okay? And kids can't really do it very well. I mean, you're playing adults. Maximilian plays 45 minutes to an hour a day of chess. And this isn't like the spell. Like, I look at the kids in the spelling bee, and I'm going, where's the value in that? I mean, I was a really good speller as a kid. I'm not going to lie to you. I was a great speller as a kid. Terrible in science, terrible in math after grade 9, but I could spell, and I could write. I don't know what happened, but I could spell. Now my problem is pronouncing athletes' names. That's going. Like, that's an early sign of something wrong with me. I'm having a lot more trouble pronouncing athletes' names. But Max plays an hour or two on weekends or before major tournaments, got into an after-school chess program when he was 6. If you have 6 and 7-year-olds, what are your main concerns with them? Speaking, English, tying laces, eating food, using utensils, cleaning up, not wetting your bed. This kid's worried about rook to bishop 4. And that said, I don't know if you're like me. My first thought on seeing a 10-year-old chess master, seeing his picture, he became a chess master when he was 9 years and 11 months. Youngest master ever in the United States. My first thought is, how far could I go with him? Okay? Chess play, white versus black, get a board, 8x8 squares. I want to go 20 moves each with 10-year-old Maximilian Liu. I can't be the only one that thinks I could do it. I'm honestly not this deluded guy who a lot of people get to my age and it's weekend warrior stuff and I could do that. Walker has that thing with the free throws, right? You've probably heard that he thinks he could go to an empty gym and deposit, what's he say, 70, 65, JD? He says 60. Walker's going to go to an empty gym and make 60 of 103 free throws without practice. No, he's not. He isn't making 60 of free throws in a row. First of all, there is a fatigue factor even with free throws. He's going to get tired by about 80. Mentally, he'll be grinding and counting. Counting and grinding. But in the case like this, like I wasn't a bad chess player. And I won everyone's going to laugh. Or mock. A seventh grade tournament at Oxbow Public School. And I don't know why we had a chess tournament. Kids should play chess in class. Think about all the things you do in an elementary school class. Chess should be taught. I'm trying to teach my 9-year-old chess. He's got modest interest, right? It's not as exciting as Minecraft or The Sims. Okay? I think he has a girlfriend on The Sims I'm not approving of right now, by the way. So chess is something that's universal. It's never going to go away, right? What's the concept about Bill Belichick? Belichick plays chess. The other coaches play checkers. I would like to give this 10-year-old a little bit of a ride for his money and make sure that he couldn't checkmate me in... Because I wouldn't do this with a physical feat. There's kids that can run faster than me. There's kids that can... I lost a tennis match when I was 16, and I felt like at the peak of my powers. I was never a better tennis player than when I was 16 or 17. And I lost to an 11-year-old from Switzerland in the semifinals of the camp tournament. And I've never forgotten it. His name was Nicholas, okay? I know, we're thinking Switzerland, Mary Poppins, chocolatier types. He was unbelievable. I had no answers for an 11-year-old. And you can imagine the ego hit it takes at 16 or 17-year-old, thinking you're hot crap, and an 11, like a kid that's not even, that doesn't even have teen at the end of his age takes you out. But I wouldn't mind 10-year-old Maximilian Liu. I think I could put up enough of a defense. This isn't like, I'm not talking about getting in the ring with Holly Holm or Ronda Rousey for 10 seconds. I'm talking about playing chess against a 10-year-old. He's not practicing. If you got to give me 45 minutes a day to practice for a month. And I think I'd hang in there. I think I'd get a few pawns. I'd get more than the pawns off him. I'm taking his bishop. I'm taking his rook. I'm taking his knight. I'm taking one of those pieces before I go down in flames. It's a lock. Coming up, James Johnson tweets out his disappointment about utilization by the Raptors. We know that's a bad move, but how bad a move is it? And one of the best answers given to a question that gets asked every single year by hacks. Brady and Walker, more coming up. 24-7 Lions lead the Eagles, 13-14 left in the third quarter. You're watching on Sportsnet 360, listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Back to Brady and Walker on TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So this could be an awful end of the season for the Philadelphia Eagles. They trail 31-7 now to the Detroit Lions in the Thanksgiving Day, quote-unquote, classic. For years, didn't matter who the coach was. Most of the Matt Millen era with Marty Mordenweg, Steve Mariucci, later Jim Schwartz. They could not win on Thanksgiving. But they're about to win their third straight, the Detroit Lions are, 31-7. And, yeah. Matt Stafford's got four touchdowns, three drops today, and he's 24 of 33. So he's got 9 incompletions, 3 of them drops. I think they might even put up stats that said 4 drops. So he's been near perfect against the Philadelphia Eagles. I know the Eagles aren't fantastic on defense. Not the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens, but that's a really good quarterback. This is why you have games like this. And Detroit ain't moving off Matt Stafford. Chicago didn't move off Cutler. San Diego Rivers. Dallas Romo. There's a lot of guys. Baltimore Flacco before the Super Bowl year. You don't move off a guy that you even moderately like that can give you games like this. There's only 7 or 8 teams. Look at even the AFC South. 3 teams love their quarterback. And 2 are kids. Bortles in his second year and Mariota in his first. Those guys will be there. There's nothing that will stop those two from being there, I'd say 6 years from now. 6 years is a long time in anybody's life or anybody's professional career. But barring a debilitating injury, 2021, Marcus Mariota's quarterback in Tennessee and Blake Bortles is quarterbacking Jacksonville. And you know what else? Andrew Luck's quarterbacking in Indianapolis as a 31-year-old. And he's got a Super Bowl. And he might have two. Those things are happening. So Matt Stafford's just fine. J.D. Bunks, our producer, he's understanding now. He's seeing listen, it takes an American holiday sometime to see the light. This is why he's the host of Free Association, an NBA podcast, and not Pigskin Perfection, an NFL podcast. A quarterback. Yeah, it's I know there's some issues. We're ironing some things out for the Terrible 10 starting tomorrow. So the Montreal Canadiens, 31-7 Lions. We've got great games coming up on Sportsnet. Carolina-Dallas should be a doozy. We were talking with Randall the Handle about that. And that's on Sportsnet at 4 o'clock. We'll address it more in the 3 o'clock hour, too. And Bears-Packers tonight on Sportsnet at 8 o'clock. It's just a wonderful, wonderful day. You can tell. Walker's not here. There's three football games on. Man, it's like walking on a cloud. So the Montreal Canadiens last night beat badly the New York Rangers. Problem is, starting goalie goes out. And Carey Price is going to be out for a notable amount of time, sources are saying. The Canadiens are easily the best Canadian team. Like, we don't dispute that. And we haven't disputed that for a couple seasons. And regular season results, this is hard to believe. This is a team that was 15th. I know it was a bit of an off year, but they were 15th, I think, in the short season, the 48-game year. And it got them Alex Galchenyuk. Not too shabby. The year the Maple Leafs got Morgan Rielly. So it was the year before the short season. Now, Montreal has lost four regulation games in 23 games so far. Goals against 32. No one else in the division is above 9. The Rangers and Washington are out to great starts. It kind of looks like a three-horse race in the East. Mark Bergevin was on the Tim and Sid show yesterday. Now, he got a contract extension, so he became a little bit newsworthy. And it's kind of well-established. Elliot Friedman was just on with us and kind of said, of course the Canadians should be looking. There's a window. It's always a window of time with a pro sports team. And a team will lose in the playoffs in the NFL or the NBA or the NHL, and you'll say, window's starting to close a little bit. I thought the Canucks, let's take the Canucks for example. Post-11, they win 15 playoff games. The Luongo-Schneider stuff gets a little messy in the offseason. But they come back, and they got beat badly by the San Jose Sharks in the first round. And that window closed. The window to win the Stanley Cup for the Vancouver Canucks was slammed shut at the end of that 2012 season. And Walker and I debate this all the time. Can you win? Are you likely to win? Are two very different things. On opening day in baseball, opening day of all the other seasons, can you win? Sure. It all has to break together. Everything has to go your way. Are you really capable of winning is a totally different conversation with a totally different number of teams. Montreal can win, and in the last couple of years, they've gotten more capable of winning. Mark Bergevin on Tim and Sid addressing sort of questions about team needs and where they could go and where they really can't go in terms of acquisitions before the trade deadline comes.
Well, you always have to manage expectation as far as, you know, do I really believe there's one player that you could get that's going to make you over the top? I don't believe in that. I believe that it's playoff is too, there's too much at stake as far as injuries are concerned. You could, you know, sell your future and then the first game you lose a key player and he can't be replaced. So I believe depth will get you through a Stanley Cup. I lived in Chicago. You always try to make adjustment. But in a cap world, it's almost impossible and very difficult to make bring key players. And usually these players are not available anyway.
It's a great experience. A lot of times people say this. Mark Bergevin, Sean McKenzie was with him talking about his contract extension. They played that on Tim and Sid yesterday. So Montreal has a look to them, don't they? But it's sort of put on hold. It's hard to judge a team with Carey Price out of the lineup, Brendan Gallagher out of the lineup. They'll utilize Torrey Mitchell when he's healthy as well. I don't think many people feel constituted as they are. Not that there's an overwhelming Stanley Cup favorite, but you do put, I always say this about sports, you put, like, if you ever had a line of credit, and as a student, you can go get a line of credit. I remember I got one for $5,000. My parents helped me, like, you had to go into the bank, sign for it. And I remember thinking, this is fantastic. but it's $5,000. And once you're paying tuition and books and rent, and that, it's gone within a couple months. It's just the way it goes, right? Parents who have kids in university, if you're in university now, you know what it's like. And teams build up credit. Like, I'd give a long credit line, and I did even last year, to the LA Kings. Yeah, I give a long credit line to the Chicago Blackhawks. The team I don't give as long a line of credit to are teams like San Jose and Montreal. I don't. I can't even. The San Jose Sharks do so much right. And I think they have a great coaching staff right now. I think they've upgraded their coaching. I do think Pete DeBoer is a better head coach of a team in the National Hockey League than Todd McClellan. I think he's more built for it. I think DeBoer's built a great staff. I'm partly biased. I know those guys. I know Bugner. I know Spott. I think that's a really good staff. But there's a certain element of proving it, isn't there? And Montreal is there also with a coach who's gone to the Stanley Cup Finals, with a GM. And we think about what makes a great GM. Being on teams with that kind of experience, he mentioned Chicago. He was on good St. Louis teams. He was on the 96 Detroit team that lost to the Colorado Avalanche. So he's been there and seen that. He knows what teams need. What he's referencing is the fact it's harder to go and get. There aren't too many people out there that I think Montreal, that think Montreal can win as they are currently constituted. But are they a step away, a tweak away? Sure. How many teams could really get on a run and win the Stanley Cup? New York Rangers have come awfully close. Couple of those Tortorella teams with a really deep defense, I thought they could win it. It wasn't enough scoring. The Pittsburgh Penguins are a team you look at and you're very, very skeptical of. But I think Montreal's really, really interesting. There'll be something to watch. Elliot Friedman mentioned at top of the hour. Really interesting to watch what they do come trade deadline time. They may even be really proactive and say, let's do this in January. Let's not do this February 29th. It's a leap year next year, and that's when the trade deadline is, by the way. Let's not wait it out and worry that we're in competition. All these teams are going to be hot and bothered to get player A, player B, player C, player D. Let's scoop a couple up before then. We know we're going for it. We don't have to wait till February 29th to know we're going for it. Because teams sometimes do that. They're bubble teams. They get hot. They win four. Fans are coming to the games. And all of a sudden, they make a move. And it's a lot to give up. Teams always do that at trade deadline. It's so easy to isolate teams that end up doing that and figuring out whether it's the right time to do it or not. So the Raptors did win last night. We talked about the good and the excellent of it. Kyle Lowry was amazing last night. Had a great night. I thought Luis Scola played very well against Kevin Love. Good performance by Bismack Biyombo. It's looking like Charlotte, which has been run terribly by Michael Jordan. Doesn't matter who the GM is. Doesn't matter who the coach is. Michael Jordan's fingerprints, handprints are all over that team. And it goes to show again why so many of the greats just don't bother. Cal Ripken hasn't managed yet in Major League Baseball. A lot of people still think he's going to. Name great NFL players that become coaches that are so driven. Jim Harbaugh was a very good NFL player. That's all I got in the last 10 years. Like, I'm going back, Jim Harbaugh, Mike Ditka. Name a very good NFL player. Very good. Perennial Pro Bowler. And Harbaugh wasn't even that. Very good top 10 quarterback at times. Had a few good seasons. But I can't think of too many guys. So the NBA is tricky in the East, analyzing Toronto. And I said that off the top of the show. They're 10-6 now. Had the hardest trip they're going to have. The longest and hardest trip. Plus they've been to Dallas. Plus they've been to Oklahoma City. Got to go to Houston. And they'll get it together by then. James Harden's a really good player. Dwight Howard's a really good player. Okay, they'll have their off nights, but those are good players. They'll get better. San Antonio is a very, very good team. 10-6 may not be an accurate reflection of how good this team is. And I might have been, like you, worried about it, thinking Friday against the Lakers was really, really important. Well, last night, a guy that didn't contribute to the win very much, he played 5 minutes, was James Johnson. And James Johnson tweeted out disappointment at being, how he described it, underutilized. He wrote, hashtag mood, underutilized. And I give him credit because he used the hyphen correctly. But there is this. I wanted to get your reaction to this. Because he owned the tweet. A lot of people like the fact he didn't delete the tweet and pretend it never happened. I have respect for that because this is a medium where you say something on the air, you can't pretend you didn't say it. You have to be accountable. And I'm a big believer in accountability for saying dumb things, okay? I'm not a big believer in saying dumb things, but I guarantee you it will happen. What time is it now? Is the week over? There might still be a dumb thing said before 4 o'clock on Friday. A thing I get home and I'm like, why did I do that? Why did I go there? why did I always endeavor to not to make something personal. Why did it become personal? I think I'm really, really good at not making things personal about sports. We were talking about that with fans yesterday. There's a certain separation that you have to give in terms of a reality. When we're talking about David Price, there's a reality. And the reality for James Johnson is, I think that's a big mistake. But is it more impressive that he owned the mistake, left the tweet up there? I mean, I can't even believe we're talking about this. The apology tweet, he writes, "My bad, just want more than anything to be a big part of something special for fans, teammates, and coaches. Hashtag We the North." Now, admittedly, he did the right thing, and there weren't emojis of people crying. And he didn't put up an emoji of a basketball. Grown men shouldn't use emojis, but that's another story entirely. I think they're for females talking to females, and they're for kids talking to everyone. My kid uses 8 emojis in a sentence. I can't stand it. It's crazy. But James Johnson's a grown human being, right? Right? Makes millions of dollars to play basketball. Hasn't played more than 15 minutes in the last 7 games. So you tell me, how disappointed should Masai Ujiri be, or Dwayne Casey be, about a tweet? It's real. It happened. I think in 10 years, we'll talk about how we communicate via Twitter and we'll go, what on earth was that all about? I think it's really valuable as a news service. I've said it a million times over, and I mean it. If I was a pro athlete, I'd never be on it. I wouldn't have an account. Because guess what? Kobe Bryant has an account, and that's a mistake. Kobe Bryant was 1 for 14 the other night. Do a search of Kobe Bryant's Twitter account. It's a bunch of do-nothings telling him he sucks at basketball. Who would do that anyway? I can't imagine being of any age and thinking, you know what I'm going to do? Tonight's a good night for this. I'm going to tweet Charles Barkley and tell him he sucks. Who are these people? Where do they come from? Where are their parents? Maybe not even still with them, but where are they? And James Johnson kind of bought into the Twitter world a little bit and thought, let's get some attention. He's not in the right frame of mind to do it. He's upset about the playing time, and the explanation makes some sense. 416-870-0590, *590. Give me a quick read on the level of disappointment you'd feel for Masai Ujiri or Dwayne Casey. Mistakes get made, right? People have feelings. People need attention, and they need stroking sometime. Some of us need a lot less of it than others, but everybody needs a little bit. You need a little bit of love, right? Okay? You walk in the door at night, you want to get asked how your day is. If your partner... You get in the door and she or he is yammering on for 15 minutes about how their day was like, and you never get asked. It's one-way traffic, right? You're really disappointed by that. I can't say too much about it. My wife has a conversation with somebody that's in her life. It's not a parent. It's not a relative. And every time there's a phone conversation, I never hear her. You know how you're in the room and you hear phone conversations from the other room? Sometimes you don't even mind being in the room because you're curious. It's like listening to a press conference, right? Why do we watch press conferences? We want to see what people say about stuff. And when she has a conversation with this person, she's talking, I'd say about 18 to 20% of the time. The other person is doing 80 to 82% of the talking. That's sort of a dysfunctional friendship, isn't it? I this, me that, you that. And I have to talk because there's a microphone here and you're expecting to hear things out of the microphone. But I'm not like that off the air. I hope I'm not anyway. What James Johnson did getting off the court and doing this has to be disappointing to management. Don't know how it can't be. I know he used to play 20 minutes a game. He'd count on it. Now he doesn't play where he plays 5 minutes a night, 7 minutes a night, 11 minutes a night in a blowout, 6 minutes a night in a closer game. Some nights he's not utilized at all. We've all talked about the playoffs. Didn't see him much late in that series against Brooklyn in 13. Saw him even more scarcely in 14 against the Washington Wizards. I don't know where it goes, but Dwayne Casey doesn't have a Twitter account. Dwayne Casey's not putting sad faces on when the team loses to the Utah Jazz or Sacramento Kings last week. That's the way to handle it. Like, where are we at here with Twitter? When's it going to stop? There's got to be a maturity level where you handle these things. And even if it's temporarily for a moment, James Johnson's not getting another chance with me. I'm not cutting a guy over a Twitter account. You cut Johnny Manziel because of lies and deceit and bad behavior and brazen disrespect for authority. But James Johnson's got probably one more crack at this year. I don't doubt it made the conversation at the Raptors front office today. And Dwayne Casey was pretty quickly notified about it as well. 3 o'clock on the way. We'll talk more about this Carolina-Dallas game coming up at 4. And one of the Packer greats who played with Brett Favre joins us. It's our 3 o'clock hour. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.